without further ado, I'll introduce you to Drew Lawrence himself. Let's give him a big hand.
Thank you. Om Jnana Tamarandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Thank you for the wonderful, perfect setting of the mood. Shifted the energy dramatically. Kutu invited me, thanks so much. He invited me to... He says, well, you're coming to L.A., why don't you come and speak? I said, sure. Why not? What do you want me to speak on? Tell me. He says, well, how about relationships? I said, sure. Why not? And I said, why don't you write something, put something together, a little promo thing, and send it to me, email it to me, and I'll just, you know, make sure it's good for me. I can do it. And that's it. He'll send it out to his mailing list. I'll send it out to my mailing list. Off we go. So he comes back with sex, soulmates, and your stars. What the... Well, that should pique some interest very quickly. Mm-hmm. So, and I looked it over. Great. So I didn't change a thing. Not a word. Not any of the promo. It was great. So this past week or so, we sent it out to my mailing list, which is 2,500 names around the world. You're doing it where? Los Angeles. When are you doing this in Ireland? How come you're not doing this in Singapore? What about us here in Canada? We want to hear this. So it had quite an effect. So this is what the questions that Kutu had posed. Do we have only one soulmate? How do I best choose a compatible mate? What role do the planets play in love and relationships? And how can I clear my karma to be available to real love? All of those? Great questions. Great questions. So, let's begin with soulmate. I'm sure you know people like this. I remember this one woman, she said to me one time, she said, I know it, I just met him. I met my soulmate. I said, well, that's good, Jane. Isn't that the fourth one this month? It can't be that easy to meet soulmates. And they can't come so in rapid succession, I don't think. So we have to be careful, and there are a certain few guidelines that we have to know and have to apply in finding the relationship of our dreams. So, is it difficult to meet your soulmate? Or is it the easiest thing in the world? It's both. It's difficult to meet your soulmate when circumstances aren't right. When you're not ready, and the time isn't quite right. In astrology, there's a simple statement, and we all know it, but we don't always say it in relation to astrology, but we all know this, we all say it. Timing is everything. Who doesn't believe that? Nothing to do with astrology. Timing's everything. And timing, a combination of factors have to come together at just the right time, and certain things will take place in our lives. We all know it. So astrology simply helps us to determine when. When that timing is likely to happen. But if we say, for example, looking at your stars and your birth chart and say, well, here's the timing. It should happen right here after August, but you don't show up. I'm here. I'm ready. No, you're not. You're not ready. You haven't done the homework, or you haven't yet shifted yourself. You're not ready to receive. You're still operating in terms of the old habit patterns. And sometimes people become a little desperate and we start jamming square pegs into round holes and insisting that it fit. I know he's my soulmate. Okay? Don't you tell me different. I did a chart for this lady one time. Very nice lady. The main thing on her mind was she was in this new relationship and she knew she had found, they were a lesbian couple. She knew she had found the relationship of her lifetime. And she says, right? And I looked at the chart and I said, not so sure about that. Well, then she got really angry with me and refused to pay me. So, you know, sometimes people, they don't want to hear what they don't want to hear. Okay, so what's first in relationships to make them work? The first thing is mutual respect. Absolutely essential. Can we do without it? No. Can we have respect on one side from one party and not the other? No. Sorry. You can't. You have to know that your partner embodies, if you're a woman, your partner embodies your male principle. This is a reflection of the male principle in your life in physical form, standing in front of you, and vice versa. If you're a man, your partner's a reflection of the female form, personified, standing in front of you. A relationship is a combination of two parts, making a third separate, distinct whole or entity. There's you, there's your partner, and there's the relationship. It's not just you and your partner. If you don't respect the relationship and give it its due, it won't last. It won't work. Mutual respect is essential. Well, what are some examples of giving mutual respect or its opposite? You can't criticize. That's confirmed. When you meet somebody and you tell your friend, your best friend, oh, I just met him. He's like this, and he's that, and he's this. He does this, and his smile, the dimples, and oh my God. Right? And you itemize all these wonderful things. Is he all those things? May well be. Now what about all the things that aren't so, right? Do you mention those? No. No, not usually. Do you need to? Not necessarily. But then after a while, when the relationship begins to wane, what happens? What do you mention? He does this, he does that. Oh, this drives me nuts. And I hit, right? So relationships, as they begin, as they blossom, as they flower and unfold, where does all this take place? In the heart. Aren't relationships centered in the heart? I mean, where else are they supposed to be centered? And love does what to the heart? It unfolds it like a lotus. It puts it into bloom. And all the beauty that's in your heart comes out. or is inspired, isn't it? Now, if you can keep the relationship in the heart, what will happen? It will deepen. It will become deeper, more powerful, more loving, more well connected, and it will begin to rise. Why does everybody want to fall in love? Why don't they want to rise in love? Right? But sometimes, and time is a powerful factor, isn't it? Sometimes, after a while, by the influence of time and gravity, which pulls everything down to the earth. Look at me. I used to be young and attractive. No, really. I used to be. Gravity. Age. So, then, once the relationship shifts from the heart to the head, it's the only question of time. It'll be finished. Because what does the head do? That's the critical factor. This is what finds everything wrong and itemizes the criticisms. Once it goes into the head, we're done. And we start, you know, what happened to all of this? All the wonderful qualities, all the feelings, all the connection. We let it slip away. When you see it, when you feel it beginning to slip away, you must bring it back. It's your duty to bring it back. If it was worth doing in the first place, is it not worth maintaining? I know there are circumstances that, but you want a heart-centered or a head-centered relationship. And you got to be very, very careful about criticism. Very careful. I don't criticize my friends, my loved ones, without, I don't offer them criticism without first asking their permission. Well, is it okay if I speak? Am I free to speak? Well, that means I'm about to say something. And if they say, oh, no, you're not free to speak, I don't speak. But my friends and I, we speak. We're always free to speak. Because we're speaking out of love. So, okay. traditional roles. If I'm leaving anybody out who is gay or lesbian, I don't mean to. In traditional roles, we are drawn to the opposite sex. And I know many, many powerful women. Believe me, many. Famous, powerful, wealthy, successful women. Queens. Queen energy. And they want a relationship like everybody else. But sometimes, no, I don't want to say it's just all powerful women, but the point is that everybody that I know, pretty much, the man wants to be in the male role in relationship. The woman wants to be in the female role. Even though she may be powerful and dynamic on the world stage, in the relationship, she wants to be loved. respected, held, protected, honored, cared for, most especially made to feel like a woman. That's what she wants. I don't care how powerful she is. They all want that. That is nature. That's nature. And a man, ideally, should be able to provide that. A simple example. You're lying in bed, you're asleep in the middle of the night. There's a sound in the house. Who gets out of bed to investigate? Well, it would normally be me, but my wife is already out and down the hall checking it out. But no, the man does that. The woman expects the man to do that. Very simple example. We humans do something that no other species does, that I know of. You may correct me. We do role reversal. So the woman takes up the male role and the man takes up the female role. Do they discuss this over tea? No. It's wherever there's a vacuum that needs to be filled. Is a woman happy doing that? No. You know, women may say, again, certain women may say, they may pretend that they love being in control in a relationship. They don't really love being in control. They don't love being controlled either. We want a mutual exchange is what we want. So, when there is role reversal and a man ends up in the female role and a woman in the male role, resentment develops. Nothing even may be said. It doesn't have to be said. It's a feeling. It's an energy. And you all know what it feels like. Those of you who have been through it, you know exactly what I'm talking about. And she's resentful because he's not taking up the male role. And he's resentful because he's being relegated to a place where he doesn't feel respected. As soon as a man says, "You need to know that I wear the pants in this family." Sorry, my friend, you do not wear the pants in the family. Not when you have to say it out loud. And I know that's an old expression, but wearing the pants doesn't mean dominating somebody. It's not what we're talking about here. And the man may then become emasculated. Not good. Not good. And what do men do when we have role reversal? They generally do one of two things. They split. What does that mean? Well, they watch every sporting program on TV. Or they work and they're never home. Got to work, got to feed the family. Or they're down at the bar. Or who knows? They're not present. Or they do the worst thing known to man. They do this to the woman. They grind her down. And they try to beat her down so she feels inferior and they can feel superior and reclaim the masculine position. Oh, that works wonders. It's the worst possible thing. Are there relationships out there that are functional, quote unquote, functional relationships where there's gender reversal? Yeah, you know them. They've been married for 20 years, 30 years, 40 years. You've seen them. You know them. Are they happy marriages? They might have some good things, you know. But what I was saying is, in the animal kingdom, as far as I know, I've never seen a male frog behave like a female frog. Never saw it. They don't do role reversal. unless you're a praying mantis and then she eats you after sex, but that's a separate thing. Okay, so that we have to be careful about roles. Well, how do we end up in these positions of role reversal? Think about your childhood, my friends. Who was the dominant parent in the home? If it was your father, then you have about a 90% chance of the man in your relationship being in the male role. If your mother was the dominant parent in your childhood, then you have about a 90% chance of the woman being dominant in your relationship. Why? It's learned behavior. Well, can't you get around that? Can't you change it? Of course you can. You can change anything. You can change anything, but you can't change anything. You can't change something you don't recognize. Or you can't describe, or you can't define, or you can't put your finger on. How are you going to change it? Then life just happens to you. Right? So remember that your parents' relationship is more often than not the template for your married life or your relational life. But it can be changed. Okay. If we look to the planets, we look to the universe, what is... You see these every day. You see them in the sky. What is the template, universal template for relationships? What is the blueprint? Do you know? Sun and? Sun and moon. Sun and moon. Who's who? Sun is the?
Male.
And moon is the female. Who says? Says who? Sun is the male, moon is the female. Who disagrees with that? Two people here. They disagree. Here's another one. If you study cultures going back to ancient times, sun is masculine, moon is feminine. That's pretty much universal. Okay, sun and moon. One of them has its own light, and one of them doesn't. One of them reflects light. I know I can see some of you ladies squirming in your seats. What is he saying? Does the moon not reflect the sun's light? The sun's light is hot and heating, correct? Especially if we go to countries like India and different countries, it's hot. I think even here last week, no? The moon's light is cooling, pleasing. Everybody loves to look at the moon. Who doesn't like to look at the moon? Oh, look at the moon. Who doesn't say that? I don't care how old you are, you still go, oh, look at the moon. Huh? You'll do it till you go to your grave. And so you should. So the moon is beautiful, romantic, feminine. Yeah? So the moon reflects the sun's light. Yes, she has a function of her own. She has an identity of her own. But she reflects the sun's light. So what do we learn from this, my friends? If you as a woman are going into relationship with a man, and you go, I would never reflect that guy's light. You joking me? That's not your soulmate. You're with me on that one, right? You know, you don't have to toddle around behind him 4 feet in the rear. You have to want to reflect his light. We're a couple. We're a couple. It's not him standing over there and me over here. That's my partner. Well, can I meet him? Man, he's not that interesting. No, he's interesting. He's wonderful. Come on over here and meet him. You'll love him. I love him. Right? Reflecting the light. Universal. So ladies, if you don't want to reflect his light, he's not the guy. Simple. Okay, now let's look at the three levels of relationship. Okay? What are they? The first level is the bodily level or the gender level. The man, he looks at a woman, he goes, ooh, she looks great. Most especially because she's shaped like a woman. And she's got female parts. What could be better? Female parts. Gender. Huh? We want, you know what we're looking for. Does somebody have to tell you about that? No, no. It's programmed right in there. DNA. And the woman? Opposite. She looks at a man. He's shaped a certain way. He's got a little bit of beard. He's got a low voice. And he's got male parts. What could be better? And they fit together nicely. So this is the bodily or the gender level of relationship. And that's universal. Animals do it too, as we know. Okay. Now, the next level is individuality. Or personality, if you like. You're dealing with an individual. There's a person inside that body. FYI, there's a person in there. And it's good to get to know the person. And don't get too blinded by the parts. Get to know the person. Now, that person inside, in a sense, is totally separate from that physical identity, the gender identity. They're a real person. They have desires, they have a life purpose, they're trying to learn things, they're trying to do things, they're trying to unfold themselves in this world as a person, not as a woman, not as a man, as a person. Yes, as a woman, as a man, but as a person. What if you don't see that? What if you don't care about that? I've seen lots of relationships where that doesn't even come into it. Get your body parts over here, honey. I'm in the mood. She's a person. You have to recognize her as a person. You have to recognize him as a person. That's the second level. What's the third level? Tell me.
Soul.
Soul. This soul in this lifetime is in this body, this feminine body, this masculine body. On the journey, lifetime after lifetime after lifetime, evolving, growing, raising consciousness, becoming more fully aware, getting off the wheel of samsara, hopefully, repeated birth and death. There's a soul in there. How many of you have been in a relationship where the opposite person, your counterpart, has been concerned about your soul? How many? Put your hands up. Good. Well, it's because we got a tuned in crowd. So that's about, no, it's not quite a half. I'd say what, about a third? Put the hands up. My friends, there's no question of the term soulmate in a relationship when nobody's talking about soul. How can there be? Tell me. There can't be. Soulmate means soul. You must become committed to your partner's spiritual growth and development if you want to talk soulmate. If you're not interested in your own spiritual growth and development, then there's no possibility of having a soulmate because you're not operating on that level. You could have a body mate, a gender mate, you could have hot babe mate, or you could have buff dude mate. But we're talking soul mate. Right? So unless you go there, how will you be able to bring it in? How will you be able to draw it in? If we use an example of water, water has three phases of manifestation here on the physical plane. What are they? Ice, liquid, and gas. So the body is which? The body is the block of ice. The individuality, personality, is the liquid form, liquid stage. And the gas is the soul. Subtle. Right? Okay. Now, karmic soulmate versus karma-free soulmate. I just wish I could meet my soulmate. Well, which one are you talking about now? Because what if you meet your soulmate and you just wish you hadn't met your soulmate? Well, I didn't know he'd be like that. Okay. Karmic soulmate. Karmic soulmate delivers what? Karmic retribution. What do you get with a karmic soulmate? You get the lesson. You might get slapped all over the playground. This is where two people come together to learn lessons in the crucible of a loving relationship. And what do we do in a crucible? We set things on fire, don't we? Trial by?
Fire.
Well, how could that be a soulmate? Because these two people may be destined to be in such a relationship. Right? They may have a compelling connection right from the beginning. I heard people say to me, "He's not good for me, is he? He's just not good for me." And I go, "No, he's not good for you." "I know, but I can't stay away from him." No, she goes, you know. It's a soulmate. There's a connection there. So was it a past life connection? Oftentimes. Past life connection. Picking up where they left off? Yeah. Entirely possible. I do also, I've been doing for 26 years guided healing meditation work with people. Take them into the subconscious, take them into past lives where applicable, if needed. And in there you can see what these people did in previous lifetimes together. And you abandoned me in a previous lifetime, and I'm going to abandon you in this lifetime. And so it goes. As an example, many, many different things can happen, but that is one example. So that is a karmic soulmate. Karmic soulmates are teachers of very important lessons. Is it easier to learn lessons from somebody with whom you have a bond, a loving bond or connection, or from somebody that you couldn't give a damn about? Obviously, loving bond and connection. And who are the ones that we all have that you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't? Mom and dad. Mom and or dad. Right? Do you have a mother like mine? Push the buttons? Like no one else?
Yeah.
You know? How does she do that? And why does she keep doing it? Okay. So, karmic soulmate. Karma-free soulmate. Finally, he gets to it. Finally. What is a karma-free soulmate? That is the one that is romanticized and prayed for by all you true believers out there. And you, and you, and you, and you, and you. That's the one that we're really talking about here, aren't we? Oh, how wonderful could be if only I could find him or her. You know, I love this one. I love this one. Well, you know, you have to work at a relationship. Relationship is work. You obviously haven't found your karma-free soulmate, have you? Because if you found your karma-free soulmate, you wouldn't say that in a million years, my friends, because it doesn't apply. And you can't say that to somebody who believes that relationships must be work. Now, however, why ever they believe that, they may have a soulmate, but that would be a karmic soulmate. You got to work at it. You know, throw a left, right cross. Okay. For a karma-free soulmate, no. It's not like that because the karma that takes place with those two people is not introduced into the marriage or relationship by those two people. The karma comes from outside. Oh, there's karma. But not from these two people. They have to work through karma, but not caused by the partner. Yeah? You with me? It comes from here, it comes from there, it comes from there. Right? They're not the source of the problem. Okay. If you're in a karma-free soulmate relationship, you have gone beyond gender identity. You've gone beyond recognition of the individual or the personality. And you love the soul. And you are committed to the welfare of that soul walking around in your house. The spiritual welfare. If you're in a karma-free soulmate relationship, you are not wholly concerned with yourself and getting your needs met. It's not all about me. Wait a second, let's talk about me. and my needs. Well, not that your needs are not valid, but that's not what drives the relationship and this kind of relationship. And of course, this one. Real soul mates love each other unconditionally. Well, we all know that. We can all say it. Not easy to do. Or not easy to do all the time. Right? In order to attract a soul who is on the higher level of consciousness, you yourself must be genuinely on that wavelength. Right? How can you attract a soul who's there? This is your ideal. This is what you're searching for. This is what you meditate on, what you pray for, the kind of person you want. But you're not on that level. How? Does like not attract like? So maybe you have a little bit more work to do. It's okay. It's no problem. A soulmate will come to one who is acting like a soul. If you're acting just like somebody who's caught up in a gender identity, and that's your be-all and end-all, how will you attract the soul, soulmate? If you're attracting somebody who is caught up in the individuality level, how will you attract that soul? One who is acting like a soul and not simply reacting on the level of gender or individuality. What's the difference between action and reaction? What am I talking about here?
Ego and spirit?
That's true.
You respond instead of react, which is conscious versus unconscious.
Sometimes it's conscious and unconscious. Action is when you do what you must do because you must do it, because of who you are. I studied piano because I must play. I have to play. I love piano. That is action. True action. Real action. Pro action. I studied piano because my mother made me. I studied piano because my father wouldn't give me my allowance unless I studied piano. Those two examples are not true action. They're reaction. You go back, when you go home, you take a piece of paper, you draw a line down the middle. On the left-hand side, you write down everything you did in your entire life. I studied piano. I took tap dancing lessons. I was in sports. It doesn't matter. Whatever you like. Right? And on the right column, you write the reason why you did each of those things.
Something can start as an action and then being transformed into a reaction.
Correct. Whenever you're doing something to prove something, to prove this guy wrong or this person right, I'll show them. That's reaction. That's not action. You may show them. Lots of people have been motivated by that to go out and show the world and have achieved wonderful things in this world. So what does that mean? They may achieve it, but once having achieved it, it doesn't fill the soul. It's empty. Because it's the right thing done for the wrong reason. Right? So whatever we're doing, we must do out of action and not reaction. If reaction means chip on the shoulder. Okay? All right. Any questions so far? You're saying?
The development of a karmic relationship to a soulful relationship can be with the same person.
Sure. Why not? If you have two people who are growing, evolving, and are committed to that, can they not rise up out of their karmic connection into a karma-free connection? Sure. Why not? Can it happen if only one person is working on themselves? Good luck. How many times have you seen that? I've seen that hundreds of times. Both people must be committed to their own personal growth and the unfoldment, if you like, of the relationship. It can happen. You know, I've had so many, more often than not, it's women saying to me, "Well, what if he changes? You know, just what if he just starts working on himself and he changes?" Wonderful. Great. When's that going to be? He's not showing any signs of interest, you know. He's not motivated. He doesn't know what on earth you're talking about. But you're hoping he might change. Well, okay. You know. Maybe. But not likely. Yes.
Can a reaction turn into an action?
Sure. But it must be done without the need to prove something. If you want to achieve anything in life, because you must do it, because it's part of your nature, because it's part of your purpose, because you have a God-given talent, a God-given gift, wonderful. But don't be slapping other people around with it. Just do it. Do it out of love. Do it out of passion. Do it out of compassion. Do it because you must do it. You know, as with anything, some people, as you know, they're going to pick up on it, and some are not. They are just not going to get it, no matter what. And you have to detach yourself from those people who won't get it. That is oftentimes true with our parents, in case you hadn't noticed. Mm-hmm. When I was 51, many moons ago, my dad died. And I went back to Canada, where I was born and raised, and we buried my dad. And my mom and dad are my mom and dad, but they're my adoptive parents. So we buried my dad. Always liked my dad. Simple guy, but good guy. What you saw was what you got. And my mom said to me, here we are, that's true, I'm 51 years old. She says, you know, your life has been a complete waste. She says, you have never done anything of any value. You have nothing to show for yourself. You have done nothing but silly things your entire life. And look at you now, you're 51. You got nothing. Thanks for that vote of confidence, Mom. Now, you know, those are reasonably hurtful words. But I wasn't damaged by them. Why? Because when I was in my 20s, I figured it out. Never in this lifetime will those two people, God bless them, my mom and dad, ever get me. They won't. If I hold out for their approval until the day they see me. Everybody saw me. Oh my God. It ain't going to happen. Well, that pretty much proved it, didn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I detached myself from my 20s. And, you know, what are you talking about? The weather and sports. Well, I mean, what else? Or with your mom, you talk about clothes. Oh, those pants are nice. Maybe you could get another pair. Like, okay. You know. And a month and a half later, my mother died. A month and a half. And I did the eulogy for my father. And when I finished doing the eulogy, all the older people their age were coming up to me going, oh, it's a wonderful eulogy. Would you do mine when I die? I said, sure, why not? You know? Then my mother passed a month and a half later. And I said to my son, come, do your grandmother's eulogy. Aren't you going to do it? No. No. If you don't have anything nice to say, say nothing. So, pardon? No. No, I mean, I don't have to do every eulogy that comes along, do I? It's too funny because my son, he spoke nicely, but he spoke a million miles an hour. And then my grandson, and then there was a big snafu, and the organ player didn't do this right, and the choir didn't do that. There's all kinds of. And I thought, there you go, Mom. Not at all surprised, you know. Okay. God bless her. I actually, since I'm on the subject, in December I had a very, very powerful meditation. Yeah, to me it was a bit of a breakthrough. Because I met both of my mothers. I met my adoptive mother, and then I met my my birth mother also on a couple of occasions. My mother karma is not very good. Not very good at all this lifetime. And I was sitting there one morning about 5 or 6 in the morning meditating. I was meditating on the guru. My guru. Who left the planet in 77. But I was meditating on how important the guru figures are in the life. And then all of a sudden, just like a bolt, well, who were my first gurus? My two mothers. And they taught me the most difficult lessons I ever learned in my life. Bar anybody. And those souls, somehow or other, assumed that task on my behalf. And I got it. It was a completely thankless task. And who would want it? And those two souls did it. To do what? To help me. To learn these very difficult lessons. And it all came rushing out of me. And I realized that I owed them more gratitude than I could possibly muster. So that was last December. Just to end up in a nice note with my loving mothers. Okay, 5 levels of compatibility. You can figure out your own selves fairly quickly and easily how compatible you are with anybody. Again, let's turn to the universe. Why not? The universe has all the answers. What are the 5 physical elements making up the universe? Bhumirapannalovayu kammano buddharevacha. That's the Sanskrit. Earth, water, fire, air, ether, or space, if you like. All right, let's start at the bottom. Down here on Earth. Physical attraction, isn't it? We talked about it already. The body, the gender. Physical attraction. Are you attracted to him? Are you attracted to her? That one's real easy to figure out. You know, you don't need me to help you there. You can't figure that one out. I don't know what to tell you. Kind of visceral connection, but it's the lowest level, my friends, on the totem pole. It's the bottom level. Okay, let's not get too confused here. Fundamental level number one. All right. Is it absolutely the essential requirement for a successful relationship?
No.
Physical attraction? Not necessarily. Is it good? Yeah. It's fine. Are there people who don't have that but have wonderful relationships? Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Second one, water. What is water? Emotional compatibility. The loving bond. It's measured by your development of real and genuine caring for the person. Right? It's easy to love somebody when everything's going along swimmingly, nicely. When somebody starts suffering, somebody gets sick, there's a challenge, then are you there? Do you still want to be there when that happens, is the question. Oftentimes, especially in our modern world, as I'm sure you know, people will hook up and they'll go into relationship and they will bonk like rabbits. Do you say bonk here? In Ireland they say bunk. You know what I mean. So, what happens when there's a lot of sex? That's what I mean. At the beginning of a relationship, sexuality is very, very intimate. It's very intimate. And it creates an opening of the emotions. And people start to say, oh, I think I love him. Hang on. It's not exactly love. It's just, and it's a lust that has developed a powerful intimacy. That's not the same as love. Because what happens with that is it begins to wane, as you all know. It begins to wane. The sheen comes off. And then, so that's different. So I just wanted to point that out. So real emotional compatibility is the glue that holds it together. The next element is fire. And fire represents what? Ideological compatibility. So, life purpose, principles, values, morals, priorities, standards. You know, if one person's a vegetarian and another person's a meat eater, tough. If one person's a vegetarian and the other one's a butcher, you know, you want to share. Nowadays, I've had so many clients that they were raised differently. Like one was raised a Catholic, one was raised a Jew. Fine. Neither of them practices that religion, you know, because they're spiritual people now. One, they don't practice Judaism, the other one doesn't practice Catholicism, and they're coming together. Okay. A problem? No. Until when? Until the children appear. And it's funny how they revert back. No, he's going to be baptized in the Catholic Church. No, no, no. Hang on a second now. He'll be at the synagogue. And so it goes. So one's a Republican, one is a Democrat, whatever it might be. The next one is air, intellectual compatibility, right? It's the realm of ideas, opinions, communication, thoughts. What do we do mostly in a relationship? We talk, don't we? About what? Everything. Everything under the sun. You better be interested when he opens his mouth. You ever see a man in the living room with his buddies? They're watching the game. And the wife's going, honey, honey. And he's like, he's in there going. Right? You better be interested in what they have to say. And if you're not. So, intellectual compatibility. Does your mate talk about things that interest you besides cars and sports? Are you stimulated by his ideas and the way his mind works? So, in this we have shared interests. And the final one is ether or space, which is what?
Akash.
Akash. Spiritual compatibility. Now we're back full circle to soul, right? So you kind of know what that's about. Most challenging category in which to find a suitable mate, especially for whom? Women. Women. Why? Because since women take to spiritual practice in far greater numbers in this day and age, as you know they do, I wonder when that is. What do you think that is? Because what?
Because we're the moon.
Because you're the moon. Because women are more in their
heart.
And men are more in their head. That's why it is. Generally. They oftentimes try to set aside or... Since women take to spiritual practice in far greater numbers than men in our modern world, they oftentimes try to set aside or suppress their higher nature and interest when in relationship with a man who is not concerned with such things. Isn't it? How many times have I seen that? You know, I can say hundreds, but it's been more. Many, many times. There's this whole part of your life you can't talk about. It's forbidden, or maybe not forbidden, but he's not listening, he's not interested. It's this whole part. It's so important. You can't talk about it. So, it's difficult. I know. Genuine. Okay. How are we doing with time, Kutu? 5 minutes? Okay. Let me just skip right to the... I mean, I can go on and on, you know, but let's just... I generally come over prepared to these things. Yeah, okay. I'll say a few things. When you do Vedic astrology, I don't do Western astrology, I do Vedic astrology, which comes from India, which is the original system dating back to roughly 3000 BC, India. Comes from the Vedas. Veda means knowledge or science. All sciences are in the Vedas. The Vedas primarily deal with the science of karma, yoga, reincarnation, and self-realization. I studied Western astrology as well. There is a difference in calculation between the two systems. Western astrology is simply erroneous. You'll find it in the newspaper under horoscopes. It is incorrectly calculated. It is not my opinion. Modern day astronomers, that is, scientists, will tell you that. Vedic astrologers know this, but millions of people following Western astrology, somehow it has escaped them. So what does it mean? It means that some of the planets will end up in different signs. And if not always, if the planet changes signs, it will go in the Vedic chart into the previous sign, the one before. Okay? the role of Venus in marriage and relationship. When you look at somebody's chart and you see all these people out here in the world in relationships, I'd say anywhere between 70 and 90% of them went into relationship when they were in a Venus period in their birth chart. You could almost bet money on it, because Venus is the planet of love and relationship. And or when they go into a Venus period, they just want to go into relationship. That's what they feel like. They just got to find somebody, because the urge to mate and to find a partner is so strong. Okay? What is the role of... I'm just doing these very simply. What's the role of Saturn in relationships? Saturn can bring destined relationships, past life connections. And I've seen it many, many times. And K2 in Vedic astrology can also do that. Everybody knows lust at first sight. Is there a legitimate phenomenon called love at first sight? Is there?
Yes.
Yes, there is. That phenomenon, based on my experience with it in 34 years of doing Vedic astrology, is two souls are picking up where they left off. They meet each other and instantly there's this powerful connection. They can't put their finger on it. It just, where do I know you from? I know we must have met. I mean, and then they go through, where have you been? And then, no, didn't meet. There's a comfortability, a familiarity, a recognition. You can't put your finger on it. That is love at first sight. And it is two souls generally picking up where they left off. Do they recognize each other? Totally. They just have different bodies. And oftentimes they will go forward in relationship. If they're already in a relationship, maybe not. But, I mean, with other people. A Saturn in a chart can also show you sometimes some people will not find what they're looking for in relationship in the first 40 years. Will they find relationship? Yeah, they may find relationship. But they may not find the right one. They may not be ready for the right one. We have to prepare. So when we, for those of us who have had more than one relationship, they unfold. Each relationship should be a progression. Better than the last. Why? Because you've learned lessons. If you keep attracting the same person over and over and over again with the same problems, only a different body. Hello. Yeah, my mom. You know. So we need to see the progress. We need to see the evolution. And if you're seeing that, we're okay. It's a question of time. And sometimes you need that interim one to sort of get you ready for the real one or the next one. Okay, well, we'll end it there. Questions for anybody? Questions, comments? Kirsten?
The effect of Saturn, also, I've heard something about, the period of 7.5, Satisati. Mm-hmm. How would you say that that reflects on relationships?
Well, it may or may not reflect on relationship. She's talking about a transit of Saturn on the natal moon, over the natal moon. So if you, say, for example, have moon in Aries, then you look at the signs on either side of Aries. On one side of Aries, you've got Pisces. After Pisces comes Aries. There's your moon. And after Aries comes Taurus. Two to 2.5 years is how long Saturn sits in the sign as he moves through the sky. So a couple of years in Pisces, a couple of years in Aries, a couple of years in Taurus, which will be either anywhere from 6 to 7.5 years in length. And my experience is I'm more concerned about when it's right on top of the moon. And if there are planets on either side of the moon, then I'm more concerned about it. If there's no planet on one side or the other of the moon, it's less of a factor, I find. But Saturn on top of the moon is generally a very, very difficult time in a person's life. It doesn't matter who you are. And he creates some kind of disruption. It can be a relationship. It could be somebody close to you dying. You could lose a lot of money. You could lose your job. Any one of a number of things could happen. In some cases, more than one. More than one.
What happens when Saturn moves on top of Venus in any house or whatever?
Saturn on top of Venus can challenge the relationship.
Uh-huh.
But it can also deepen the relationship. You know, my wife and I, consciously, when we are going through what on paper, astrologically, is a threatening or potentially dangerous planetary influence, then you play into it. You work with it. So I'm not going to see her for the next month. That's what's happening right now. I'm not going to see her for an entire month. There's value in that. Then we appreciate each other more when we see each other, and the negative influence of the planets prying things apart, in this case it's K2 for us, we give him his due. And so instead of him ripping us apart, we go consciously. We make the decision to go. So now you're cooperating with the karma, but you're setting the parameters. Does that work?
Oh yeah.
It works. It works. Make it work for you. Yes.
A lot of what you've been talking about assumes, because the topic, that a relationship is you're either finding a relationship or you're in a relationship and developing and progressing spiritually and so forth. Is it possible for an individual to remain an individual, not seek or have a relationship,
yes. Spiritual. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But that wasn't the topic that Kutu chose. Absolutely. Yeah, you don't need a relationship. But, you know, I used to say this to people just because it sounded funny. You know, everybody is either in a relationship, looking for a relationship, looking to get rid of a relationship, except for two guys up in the Himalayas in caves. They don't really care about a relationship. Well, I know there's more than two guys up in the Himalayas, but no, you don't need a relationship. And you don't need a relationship to become complete. But that is a far more evolved level. Far more evolved. And most people are not on that level. I've had two marriages. I'm in my second marriage. My first marriage went 15 years. Then it ended. And then I went 17 years unmarried. And the longest relationship I had at that time was 6 months in the whole 17 years. And then, of course, you know what people say. Well, you're afraid of intimacy. You're of commitment phobia and all the stuff that they, you know. No, I didn't. I just hadn't found the right person. Pardon? Why do I think it took 17 years? Because my standards are high. That's why. And I didn't settle. Yes.
Are you saying that relationships make you, or can bring about completeness in you? And at what point where you feel like you were complete? For your next relationship after that 17 years?
Well, I did certainly mature. Maybe just by virtue of age. I did mature. I became more ready. I became more available. So that was part of it. But I also knew what I was looking for. I hadn't found it. Maybe I hadn't found it because I wasn't ready for it. And maybe that's why I hadn't found it. Which is legitimate. What?
The timing is
everything. Timing is everything. Timing is everything.
I heard you say that people pray or they meditate to find a proper good relationship.
Yeah, lots of people do.
Yeah. And I thought that to be surprising because I don't. But I feel like I'm almost waiting for them to show up, and I was, and after listening to you, I'm thinking, man, has she passed me up, or she's gone, or maybe she's walked next to me, or because I'm so resistant to, not resistant, but kind of not looking for the relationship, and I'm not praying or asking her, because I felt that I've had in the past, and just never worked out for me.
Well, maybe it's better for you just to allow it to appear and unfold. What we said right at the beginning, you know, to find a soulmate, it's either the hardest thing in the world or the easiest. Do you have to go to the bar?
No.
And look, no, not you. You don't have to go anywhere. You don't have to go anywhere.
And I guess that's the problem, because that's what I've always, I've never been a problem with that. But now that I'm not looking at all, it just seems like maybe it's like nobody's showing up.
Well, you see, then we would look astrologically. You might be in a period right now where no one is going to show up currently. But then you go into, say, a Venus period or a planet that rules the seventh house, which is relationships. And then that's when they usually come. That's when they appear, more often than not. You don't always have to be doing it and thinking about it, meditating on it. You don't necessarily have to. And the other thing is, if you're going to think about, meditate, and demand with all the qualities, what you're asking for may not be what you need. It may not be the best thing. And maybe you should ask them to send you the best thing for you. Now that takes a little bit more surrender to have that attitude. But that can be a wonderful, wonderful experience if you're open to it. And that's what my wife did, by the way. Nursing?
What is the Vedic perspective on humanity's relationship with the Earth in the 2012 shift? Do you have any...
In Vedic astrology, there's no obvious indication of anything happening. And in the Vedas, it's very clear about the different ages and seasons that the universe goes through. And we are going through the Iron Age or the winter, and that's why everything is degenerated, but we're also going through kind of like a minor period of a golden age or an awakening. Both of these things are going on simultaneously, as you all know. One colleague of mine said, why is it that for the first time in our memory, all of a sudden the Mayan calendar is so important? Why is the Mayan calendar getting all this interest? When did you look at the Mayan calendar before you heard of 2012? When did your parents look at it? When did their ancestors? You know? I just hope it's not a Y2K deal. You know? Obviously, you can see what's happening. Look at the weather. Look at these patterns. Look what's happening now. I mean, there's some heavy-duty stuff happening, going on. I don't know what's going to happen in 2012, but I'm not too worried about it. You know, my advice is stay close to God. You'll be fine.
Amen.
All right? Thanks very much.
Some wisdom, some value from you.